Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay from Chicago, and I will be the host for our presentation today. Today is Sunday, September 21st, 2025. Let me give you the share ID numbers for Friday, September 19th. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 22,795. That's 22,795. For the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting on Friday, 22,800. That's 22,800. So this morning, A Vision for You presents Must Undergo a Change of Heart. You know, many of us, we venture into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. If you're like me at all, we have an idea that if we could just remain abstinent, we could just remain, as the book talks about, sober for a period of time. You know, perhaps we could, you know, thereafter eat normally. At least that's what I thought. And when I arrived here, what I learned pretty quickly was that my perceptive lens in which I see this problem, really I see the world, is flawed. At least mine was. And that perceptive lens tells me that if I could just find a way to stay on a diet long enough, you just give me the food plan. Call it whatever you want. You guys call it a food plan? Yeah, give me that. And I'll lose the weight, and all's going to be well. And this time it will be sustainable. All the other times it wasn't, but this time it will be. In fact, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells us emphatically that, you know, this notion isn't new. It's not. It's not surprising at all. Our eating has been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove that we can eat like other people. And that's been so true for me. And on page 33 in the chapter More About Alcoholism, it says, the idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. I want to both control my binge substances, but I also want to enjoy them as well. Maybe for a time I won't, but eventually I want to both control and enjoy them, all while staying at a healthy weight. And this illusion for me has staying power. You know, in other words, you can't think your way out of this illusion, because self-deception is extraordinarily powerful. And for the compulsive overeater, it will persist, and it will persist, perhaps to the gates of insanity or death. That's what the book tells me, and I've seen it. Now, what if there was a way out of this maddening obsession? I mean, what if there was a guaranteed solution, guaranteed, by which we can become untethered from the food? Could there be a way where there's no more struggle, no more fight to stay stopped? Because, you know, I was killing myself day after miserable day in the food. And that pathway where we become unshackled from this disease, we call that recovery. And we need to undergo a profound internal transformation. And the process referred in our text as a complete psychic change. It's referred to other things too, but I like the complete psychic change. It's deeply spiritual, and it requires a total shift in my being. A vital spiritual experience is mentioned in the book. You know, to be vital or crucial is going to require complete renewal of the mind in order to recover. We're going to hear about that from Abby this morning. The Big Book mentions a rearrangement of our ideas, emotions, attitudes. So this speaks to the need for change at depth. At depth. It cannot be merely a surface change at the level of intellect. I wish it could. It couldn't. It needs to happen at a heart level, right? So, but here's the good news before I pass it over to Abby and get to the good stuff here. We do not bring about the spiritual transformation. That was good news for me. I don't bring this about. That's the heavy lifting. And I would suggest to you that what I found, many others have found, is this is manifested by a higher power, a power greater than me, greater than human power. And that's consistent with what the text says over and over again. And why is that good news? Well, it takes the pressure off us. It takes the pressure off of me to effectuate my own transformation. I don't effectuate my own transformation. I just follow the instructions in the book. I navigate through the 12 steps. Sure, I assume the responsibility of rowing my proverbial boat, maybe gently down the stream, maybe not so gently at times, for sure. But rest assured, it's a higher power that will get us to shore. So with that, I'm going to pass it over to Abby D. Abby D is from Michigan, and she's a recovered compulsive overeater. And I like hearing her on the, you know, moderating the meeting. She does a great job, and she's devoted to the 12-step way of life, and she carries a message of hope to our fellowship. So it's with much gratitude and appreciation that we welcome Abby to the line this morning. Good morning, Abby.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you so much. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're coming through perfectly. Thanks.
Okay, thank you so much. Hi, everyone. Good morning. My name is Abby D. I'm a recovered compulsive eater from Michigan. Larry, thanks for that opening. You summed up a lot about, you know, that this was not my doing, but me following the 12 steps. And so I just want to say welcome to everyone this morning. Welcome to the newcomers. And thank you so much for asking me to be here. I feel much gratitude for being asked to share, that I'm even able to share. I've been recovered from this hopeless state of mind and body for 7 years. And I'm really passionate about the topic, must undergo a change of heart. It's actually quoted on page 143 in To the Employers. And I just want to start with that. So it says, it should be pointed out that physical treatment is but a small part of the picture. You should understand that you must undergo a change of heart. To get over drinking or compulsive eating will require a transformation of thought and attitude. We all had to place recovery above everything, for without recovery, we would have lost both home and business. And so this idea that I need to have a change of heart, that getting over compulsive eating, it requires me to have a transformation of thought and attitude. What life was like for me before recovery, I struggled with bulimia from an early age. The obsession around food was strong. I was either thinking about what I was going to eat, what I was not going to eat, how I was going to get rid of what I ate, how I'm going to exercise away what I ate, how would I get to this certain point of being thin. Even when I got to that point, it wasn't enough. I needed more. And it was followed by periods of incomprehensible demoralization. So I would restrict, binge, restrict, binge, restrict, binge, control it myself. Even if I had periods of control, I would lose control, and it would be worse. I would be worse off than I was before. I've illness. It gets worse, never better. I had 2 years of abstinence and relapsed, and it got much, much, much worse. And so thank God for the 12 steps, my higher power, and the people that helped me in this program, that it's been 7 years since that relapse. And one day at a time, I've been able to follow the instructions in this big book to stay stopped. And every day it requires me to have a change of attitude, a change of heart, a change of my perception, and I'm constantly on guard for those things that come in that try to, you know, that derail me from my higher power. So the central idea today is that recovery is not just about food. Set my timer because I forgot. There we go. Recovery is not just about food. It's really about a fundamental change inside, a transformation in how we live, how we relate to God, how we relate to ourselves and others. And this change, I do just want to preface, it can only happen after I put the food down. So that has to be first. You know, I cannot undergo, everything I'm going to talk about today is after the food is put down. I can't undergo a change of heart while engaging in compulsive eating still. So that has to be first. And so what I'm going to talk about today is the need for a change, how that change happens, how I deepen the change, and then living day to day in the change and what that looks like. So page 25 talks about there's a solution. Talks about the hopelessness of the alcoholic or the compulsive eater and unless a vital spiritual experience can occur. It says, the great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. And, you know, I couldn't do this by myself. I didn't do it by myself. I still don't do it by myself, but I do continue to take action to what I can control, which is me working the steps, following the directions in the big book, and continuously trying to seek a new relationship with my higher power, continuously trying to put aside what I think I know so that I can have an open mind and a new experience. Page 27 talks about ideas, emotions, and attitudes. They have to be cast to one side and completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. And this change has to come from within. The big book talks about when working with others, like not pushing your prodding anyone. That if a person doesn't want to see you, like they shouldn't be pushed. And the desire to find God must come from within. And for me, it did. I mean, the pain of this disease and the constant obsession of eating or not eating, dieting, not dieting, like just the constant obsession with food and body and weight, it was really debilitating. I had very little mind power for anything outside. I was trying to hold down a job and I was trying to do other things, but it's just so distracting. It's to the point where I was really, really distracted and really, really in a lot of pain. And, you know, that desire to find something new, like it did come from within. I was willing to go to absolutely any length. It says in here that we have to be willing to go to any length. I really didn't even need to be asked that question because it was shown through my actions that I was willing to do whatever it takes. I was constantly asking what's next to my sponsor. I couldn't get enough. I was doing things, you know, doing whatever my sponsor asked and then asking, okay, what do I do now? Okay, what do I do now? Like I was really, really, I was trying hard to get out of the hole that I was in. And it says on page 93, the main thing is that I'd be willing to believe in a power greater than myself and that I live by spiritual principles. So how this change happens is, it starts right there, you know, like steps 1 through 3, I acknowledge my powerlessness. I believe that there's a power greater than myself, and I make that decision to turn my will and my life over. And once I do that on page 63, it says we launched out on a course of vigorous action. This is the beginning. This is the beginning of the change. And for me, this was probably one of the most powerful parts is seeing my part in, not my part, but seeing my character defects, seeing where I was wrong. That was really big for me. So this was really the beginning, the willingness to see my wrongdoings. I have to have a new idea, an attitude about resentment. I can't live in resentments. I know that resentments will kill me. It says, I'm talking about step four, that, you know, that these are fatal. These can be fatal. So if I have a resentment, sometimes I just come back to the belief, like come back to the idea that, okay, do I want to die or do I want to have an open mind? Like, do I want to have a new perspective? And then, you know, it talks about, I'm just going to go to that page. So it says that resentment is the number one offender. And on page 64, it destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. And it really does, you know, it tells me that, and then page 66, it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. And futility means like pointlessness and uselessness. And that's powerful to me because if I'm living in resentment, like my life is pointless and I'm not happy. And it says, to the precise extent that we permit these, meaning that if I'm in resentment, I'm allowing it to happen. Like, I'm allowing it to happen. I'm having a mindset so fixed on my belief that I'm allowing these resentments to take hold of me. It says, to the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? And there's so many... like there's so much time in a day and it's like, how do I want to spend my time? I used to think that I was okay, you know, blaming everyone and everything. And, you know, like blaming my parents for things and blaming my situation and blaming people at work. And like, it's just not a way to live. It says that the business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of food returns and we eat again. And with us, to eat is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. It goes on to say that, you know, these things are poison. We cannot wish them away. So, you know, I can't just wish them away. I had to have these steps to help me get out of resentments. And when I was able to see my wrongdoings, like I think about someone in the courtroom, like I visualize like, here I am as like the prosecuting attorney. Like I'm just like tearing apart other people and situations and everything that they've done wrong and why they're at fault. And then I think about if in step three it says I turn my will and my life over to the care of my higher power, I'm making a decision that I'm going to have a new, like I'm going to have a new perspective. And so what would it look like to then go to the other side of the courtroom and be the defense attorney and look at, well, you know, where is it actually that I've gone wrong and the other people are in the right or not to blame? And this has taken work, but when I'm able to like flip that perspective and be open to a new, like open to new ideas and open to another way of thinking about things, it's everything. Like my resentment lifts. I start to feel more useful in life. I start to have like peace and serenity because my peace and serenity is no longer dependent on what other people do or don't do. Like I can be okay regardless. When I start to see like, oh, I'm having a script for how people should behave or how the situation should go. And I'm being self-seeking because, you know, I'm trying this and that for everyone to follow, you know, to try to arrange everyone. my dishonesty, like I can't be okay unless the other person changes. And, you know, what am I afraid of? When I start to see those things, it puts it back on me. Like, okay, well, maybe there's some areas that I can change in. And it takes the focus off other people. And if the focus is back on me, then I'm good, because I can ask God to help me change these things. And I'm no longer, like, powerless over my own emotions, because I can ask God for clear direction on how to change that. And the next part about the fourth step is changing fear into faith. So where am I being in self-reliance about what the world should be like? My fears are based on self-reliance. And my actions when I'm in self-reliance are, my actions are totally focused on what I want and what I think I should get. And these new values and motives for sex relations, like, it's so important to practice these principles. Even in, I got married 3 years ago, and I've been abstinent the whole time. Like, I met my husband when I was abstinent, through dating, engagement, getting married, and I was married for 3 years. And, you know, I'm constantly practicing these principles in my own home. And I'll talk more about that later. But I wanted to really focus on the resentment, like, that those are not okay. Like, my life really depends on me not living there. I had this resentment recently. I got this idea that I wanted to buy something really big. It was like one day I just thought of it, and I was like, okay, I want to buy this thing. And, you know, it's like, I have other things going on in my life that I don't need to be making this huge purchase. And my husband wasn't on board. He was like, you know, what is this idea coming out of left field? And I was resentful, like, day after day, that, like, why can't we just get this? Like, why? And it took me, like, you know, being really honest with, like, my nightly review and with my sponsor and, like, prayer and just, like, give it up. Like, where is this coming from? And when I was able to let that go, like, my life and my home was peaceful, and, like, nothing changed except my perception and my attitudes. And I could really care less about that now. I get these ideas, they come and they go, but, like, when I'm in it, I think it's, like, the best idea ever, and I think it's, like, I deserve it, and I'm feeling really strongly about it. And I step on the toes of my fellows, and I see them as retaliating, that life isn't fair, and I try to push myself more, and it doesn't work. You know, at some point I have to follow it back to, like, where did I get the ball rolling? This is not important. What's more important is, like, the peace and the serenity of my home and my love for my husband and these other things that we have going on in life, that, you know, let me just follow God's plan instead of mine. And step 6 and 7, it talks about, like, you know, if we're not willing to let something go, like, we have to ask God to help us be willing. There's many things that I want to hold on to that I say, okay, God, like, please help me have a new perspective. Like, help me have just, like, change my perspective. Like, please change my perspective. Help me have an open mind to a new perspective. And I've had friends tell me, like, when I'm doing 10 steps, like, pray for a changed perspective. And that for me has been so, so helpful, because it's about my mind and where my mind tells me, like, whatever I need at that moment or whatever I think should be happening, like, help me have a different perspective so that I can be peaceful and I can be helpful to other people. So deepening this change, we get to we do the inventory and start talking about amends. And this whole process is helping me embark on this change of heart. Like, in this process, my heart is changing little by little. And I may not notice it in the time, but I am starting to have, like, little, like, moments of, like, oh, like, that makes sense, or that's really cool that I'm having, like, these tiny moments of peace. And little by slowly, like, my heart is going through this change that's brought about by me taking action, but really my higher power doing it for me. So it says, I already talked about like the resentments. We began to see that this it's the world and its people really dominated us. So all these, you know, the resentments, the fears, the dishonesty, it's all tied to my self-centeredness, that selfish, like I'm not, things aren't going my way, things aren't following my script. And page 76, we have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. So I'm willing to go to any length. Like I really, really am. And at each part of this, like I always come back to that. Like I am willing, like are you willing to have a new attitude? Yes. Like the answer is always yes. Maybe it doesn't feel good, but like yes, I am, because I don't want to go back to where I was before. I don't. I know a life without a higher power. I know a life without recovery. I know a life living in the food, and I don't want to go back there. And so we start to talk about the amends process of page 83 and 84. I'm just going to flip there real quick. So page 83 and 84 talks about the fact that, like, we have to analyze our past and really take responsibility for where we've gone wrong. And I'm not to talk about anybody else's wrongdoings here. Like this is not the time to talk about like what other people have done to me. This is me in this period of long reconstruction. It says a remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fit the bill at all. So I need to be like in my heart. I need to be really ready to take responsibility. I need to just stick to my own side of the street. The amends process has set me free in so many situations. I've had freedom from fear around them. I have a couple examples of like previous bosses that I've had to make amends to, and I was terrified. And in one of them, I made a mistake at work that was pretty bad. Like I kind of, it wasn't a mistake. It was me putting my wants ahead of the reputation of the company. And, you know, my boss found out and wasn't happy. And when I was doing my step 9, I was terrified. I remember calling my sponsor, walking over to the office because I had set up a time, and I was sweating. Like I was sweating, talking to my sponsor, like, okay, here I go, you know? And it always went back to, I'm willing to do it. Like I am willing to do it. And so here I go, my feet are going, I'm following my feet, and you know, I'm just following the directions in the big book. And my boss ended up telling me, like, you are an example of what we try to embody at this school, and you're such a great example for kids, and this process of trying to make things right. And this was someone who told me I was, like, a disgrace, an embarrassment, like, that I had really harmed the reputation of the school. And he could tell that I was serious and that I was really from my heart. I was sorry. Like I really was. I was tearful in my amends. I just admitted to where I was wrong and asked if there was anything that I could possibly do to make it right. And he saw that. And the other one, for my other boss, I was emotionally dysregulated, ended up like losing the job. And many of you walked through that with me because I was in recovery when that happened, but my emotions, you know, just got a hold of me. And so anyways, I made amends to this person. I met him like midday at this place. And I admitted like that I was emotionally dysregulated. I blamed other people. Like I just was not the employee that I wanted to be, that I hoped to be. I had to make some financial restitutions for things I took when I left. So I told him I had made a donation to the company. And again, he told me that if there was any any situation where I ever needed a letter of recommendation, he would write one for me. He spoke highly when I got my job that I have now. He spoke highly of me. They had to put my last three references. It couldn't be like just choose your three references. It had to be the last three employers. And I'm able to put these people on there, like knowing that I really cleaned up the past. And, you know, he said, he told my boss today, or when I got this new job, that he would hire me back in a second. And it's like, that is not me. Like, that was not me that did that. That was my higher power placing in me the willingness to go to any length to make things right and admit where I was wrong. And this process, like, gave me a new outlook on life. Like, my heart was really, really changing in this process. And today I really do have, like, a new honest desire to be helpful in my job and my relationships with my friends. I'm so dedicated to my job. Like, today I used to not care at all. I used to be looking at the clock. When can I get out? When can I race around town and get a hit from whatever I'm trying to get a hit from? And then, you know, show up last minute, unprepared, and just try to get the kids to be quiet. Like, that's basically it. And today I show up like prayed up, meditated in the morning. If I have difficulties with any kids, I'm asking God, like, where can I be helpful? And maybe changing my routine or, you know, the way that I do things to better help kids. Like, I feel like I'm doing a service now. Me and in my relationships, like, I had to stop blaming my parents and other people and start just showing up for service. I've mended relationships with both my parents. I've mended relationships with my brother. I have two brothers, but I didn't have good relationships with either of my parents and one of my brothers. And I mended all those relationships with the help of God and the 12 steps, and I have a great relationship with all of them today. Like, there's no one, I just can't even believe the difference and the change, even 4 or 5 years ago, like 4 years ago. You know, I had some struggles with my relationship with my dad, and these things did not go away overnight, but little by slowly waking up each day and asking God to help me have a change of heart, like, the little steps taken each day over time have led to, like, a big change. And it didn't happen overnight. I've been abstinent and in recovery for 7 years. My relationship with some of my family members really, really have gotten better over the last few years. But my dedication to my job, my mended relationships with my family, my interactions with friends have changed because I'm no longer just dumping on my friends. I would just call and emotionally dump on my friends. Like, if whatever was going on in my life, I would be upset and going through some sort of crisis. And that was my relationship. I can hear someone unmuted. So I would call my, I would, specifically my best friend, I would call her and just, you know, share about whatever crisis I was in. And I ended up realizing that, like, that's not helpful to a friendship for me just to call and emotionally dump on people. And so I made amends to her for that. And what she told me was, like, yeah, I don't know how to help sometimes. I feel powerless. Like, when you talk to me about these things, like, you know, what am I expecting her to say or do? Nothing. Because, like, people can't change me. And that's what I've realized in this program. Like, no human power can save me. I need to really take responsibility for my own actions and trust in a higher power so that I can continue to seek whatever my higher power has for me. And now I show up in my friendships, like, of service. If I have some sort of, like, drama to air out, like, I do it with people in program through the process of the fourth step or the 10th step. And I do that. And if I need to make amends, I do. I follow the steps, like, through my problems now, so that when I can show up in my relationships, like, outside of OA, I can just be of service and hang out and relax and see how, like, her kids are and ask her about her day. You know, it's not about me anymore. So through this process, I start to have, like, serenity. And the sex relations, if we're honestly sorry for what we have done, we, you know, like I have to have an honest desire to have God take me to better things. And this continues. I have an example of a step 10 that I did. I was, you know, step, it says on page 84, we cease fighting anything or anyone. And I was going home and there's family at my house and they were building this gazebo in my backyard. And I decided to make a couple extra stops on the way home. Even though I said I would be home at a certain time, I wanted to get some flowers. I'm like, what's wrong with that? You know, why can't I just like, why are people trying to control my life? This was the mindset I'm in. Like, why can't I just stop for some flowers? Like, why is my family calling me, asking me where I am? Like, just like lay off for a minute, you know? And like, this is the mindset I'm in. So I call a friend because I know I'm not in the right mindset to go home without causing any harm. And my friend asks me like to run through, you know, where am I in the wrong here? And so I do. And I'm like, you know, no, I don't owe an amends. And she's like, well, I just encourage you to like challenge yourself on that. And it was the sweetest and most direct way of telling me, like, no, like, you owe an amends here. Like, let's take a real look at, you know, your behavior here. So I'm like, well, you know, I did say I would be home at a certain time. And, like, they are at my house building something for me, like, helping us. And, you know, they want to leave and get home. And I'm here, I am just like willy-nilly out on the town buying things that like I could have just been home on time. So my plan before I got home was, instead of showing up with my attitude of, you know, whatever I had before this phone call, that I would show up and be grateful for their help. So I would thank them for their help, apologize that I was not home when I said I would be home, and just be kind and loving and appreciative of their help. And so I ended up, that was my plans. I made this plan with a fellow and I went home and I did exactly that. It was like, I had a plan. I got home. I apologized for not being home when I said, thanks them so much. It looks so good. I'm so appreciative and I love you guys. And, you know, I hope you have a good day or whatever. And then they left. And it was like, no one was mad at me. I didn't cause anyone any harm. I didn't come in with this like attitude of like lay off. And thank God for friends like that who helped me through. Like, those are the people that I call. Instead of calling my friends outside of program and emotionally dumping on them, like I call people in this program that have the solution and that I know will help me change my perspective. And same with my sponsor, like the honesty I have when, you know, I tell on myself if I'm in the middle. Like, I'm one that I call my sponsor, like, kind of frequently. If I'm having an issue, like, I'll call right there in the moment. And for me, that's what's been so helpful in this program, like, not trying to do it on my own. I've always been one to just call in the moment. It's helped me. It's saved a lot of my relationships and, you know, from me, if I leave my thoughts unchanged and I don't do anything about them, I eventually do cause harm to the people around me because my ideas are not always God-centered. And it says on page 98, argument and fault-finding should be avoided like the plague. And that's really big. Like, I don't need to be finding fault with other people and I don't need to be arguing. And so I catch myself, well, when I do catch myself, like in the middle of like either an argument with a kid or argument with my husband, it's like, oh wait, no, like I gotta go back to like the big book. Like the big book teaches me how to live life. And so it comes to like this idea of living in the change. And page 85 or 86 to 88 is really clear about how we live in this change. It tells me what to do at night, that I constructively review my day. I do this every day. I send it to my sponsor. I'm asking myself these questions. Where was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do I owe an apology to someone? Am I keeping something to myself? Was I kind and loving toward all? What could I have done better? Was I thinking of myself most of the time, or was I thinking of what I could do for the world? Was I thinking about what I could do for others? And I have to be really honest. Like, I try to do this when I'm not like dead tired. Like, very, very end of the night is sometimes hard for me. I like when I do it when I still have like a clear mind. I'm not like falling asleep. So I tell on myself when I'm thinking or acting crazy. A few days of a resentment, and my sponsor and I are talking about it, or I'm talking about it with fellows. And the prayer and meditation, it tells us, like, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Like, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it tells me specifically what to do in the morning. And the prayer and meditation time in the morning, for me, is so important. Like, when I think about the topic, must undergo a change of heart, the first thing that came to me was this, like, seeking God's guidance throughout my day. And there are so many times where I've had dilemmas, or, I wasn't sure about something, or I had indecision, and I take it to prayer and meditation, and I get an answer. Like, I really, really do get clear answers. So if I'm stressed about something that's coming up in the day, like, I will take it to my prayer and meditation in the morning, and I write things out. Like, I write out a gratitude list. I write out, like, God, what is this situation? What is your will for me? And I get guidance. Maybe it wasn't always like that, but, like, I do now. I definitely get guidance now. And, like, sometimes I don't. Like, some days, maybe I don't get clear guidance, but I eventually do. And if I don't have an answer, like, I don't take an action, or I try not to take an action, because maybe I just, God hasn't worked it out yet. But page 85 to 88, it talks about, like, this daily reprieve. Like, it's contingent on my spiritual condition. Prayer, meditation, like, improving my conscious contact with God. And I really have to seek God with my whole heart. So if I'm undergoing this change of heart, I have to seek God with my heart. Like, not just with my head, not just checking the boxes of doing the things, but, like, I really do, from the bottom of my heart, like, want God to help me be, like, different in situations I'm struggling with, like, so I can be more useful to the world. And students at work, like, so many situations with my students at work, I'll have difficulties, like, with certain kids, or, like, certain groups, or, like, staff, like, whatever is going on. Like, I'm always trying to, like, figure it out, and, like, things aren't going my way, and I just, like, I'm upset. But when I take it to prayer and meditation, what comes is, like, well, maybe, give choices, or maybe organize your groups in this way, or maybe try this. Like, I really do get answers. It's a miracle. It really is a miracle. And my fears, like, if I have a fear and I take it to prayer and meditation, like, I get clear answers and more reassurance than anyone could give me. Like, I can get, if I have a fear and I crowdsource from people in OA, like, or even out of OA, and I'm crowdsourcing, like, about my fear, and they're telling me, like, it's going to be okay and you have nothing to worry about. People can tell me that up and down all day, and the fear won't. I just, no human power can save me. And when I take it to prayer meditation and I'm asking God like to remove the fear and to help me, like show me what God would have me be instead, I get an answer that is like so comforting and so clear that if I just follow that direction, like I'm good, like the fear lifts. And so I would not be able to like live without prayer meditation. I really don't know how my days would go. They wouldn't probably go well. I used to, before recovery, you know, just wake up and fly by the seat of my pants and go to work and, you know, be grabbing this and that on the way out. And like I get up, I leave my house around 8 or a little before, and I'm up at 5:30. Like I make sure I have time to, you know, get myself ready, take care of my dog, do like a half hour prayer meditation, have an abstinent breakfast, not be rushing around everywhere. And I listen to Vision in the morning, and, you know, some days I moderate, which has been such a great service and just like so amazing. And then I go to work and it's like, I already did a lot of spiritual fitness like before I got to work, and that for me is what I need. And so we get to working with others, page 100 to 103, and working with others, it talks about this focus of like our recovery depends on carrying the message. And I even got the idea for this topic. I was asked to do the special edition, and then later that day I had a call with a sponsee, and we were going through the chapter to the employers, and I came across this paragraph that he should understand that he must undergo a change of heart. To get over compulsive eating will require a transformation of thought and attitude. And I was like, that is it. Like that like wraps up. Like that sums up, that's like the headline of my life. Like I need to just have a change of heart. And again, this is after the food is down. So that's like, the food is already down, like way down before. But this is how it stays down. And, you know, I'm constantly like learning and inspired and seeing new things when I'm going through the book with sponsees. Like, thank God that I continue to be in the book and that I continue to go through this book and share with others, you know, my story and what it's like and what it's like now and how this relates to me. Like, I'm in the book and I'm constantly, like, inspired. I mean, we're not inspired at all times. I'm not inspired at all times, like the book says. But, you know, there are those moments of, like, clarity of, whoa, like, that's really helpful for me right now. You know, I'm supposed to be helping someone else, but I'm getting so much out of it myself. And I get so inspired by this idea of the spiritual experience in Appendix 2. I'm just going to flip there. I'm so inspired by this idea of a personality change. Says that the term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading show that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself in many different forms. So these personality changes, like if I undergo a change of heart and having this personality change, it says that it's sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism, like that manifest. So in me changing my ideas and my perspective, well, not me changing it, it's my higher power, but in me having this, undergoing this process of transformation of my heart, my attitudes, my perspectives, my ideas, like it, that brings about recovery from compulsive eating. So the food is down in the beginning, but like it's not gone from me. Like I'm, you know, in the beginning I'm white knuckling it, but I go through this process And throughout the process of the 12 steps, my heart is changing. It's changing, like in each step, it's getting changed a little bit more and a little bit more. And then by the time I have a spiritual experience as a result of working the steps, like that brings about recovery from compulsive eating. Like it's amazing. It's amazing to me. And so it says it manifests itself among us in many different forms. And so these different forms, like for me, it's the pause. It's I apologize easier. I am able to see my wrongdoings. And it says, in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. And that's an appendix too. Like a vast change in feeling and outlook. So my feelings and my outlook on life, like they need to change. Not always, but when I'm disturbed, they need to change for sure. And so there's just some examples. I know that my time is kind of coming to an end, but there's some examples in my life that are really helpful to, okay, I'm trying to see my time and I forget. Okay, there we go. Okay, so just a couple examples. I did a special edition a couple years ago, and I think I talked about the sponge in the sink. And I used to be like so uptight about the kitchen. Like my husband and I, like I've been so uptight about the sponge in the sink. Like if the sponge is in the sink, like I would freak out, you know. And I had to go through like a lot with letting that go, and my resentments like were lifted. Like it was lifted. I didn't care. I focused on like the love I have for my husband. It doesn't matter to me. I just need to take care of it. Well, like recently it's come back again, and I'm like, what the heck? Like how am I supposed to be doing a special edition when the issue I talked about like years ago is now coming back? And my sponsor and I made a plan. Like if the sponge is ever in the sink, I just pick it up and I put it in the dishwasher and I don't say a word. And I just do that and I just take care of it. And it's been like such a great plan for me because it's like, I actually have a plan. Like that day that I was talking about the gazebo where I came home and I had a plan, like for me, I need a plan. And it has reduced stress in my household. It has like, I am not resentful. I can focus on like other things again. Like I have mental capacity for other things now. And you know, these are just common principles. On page 94, it says we are dealing only with general principles common to most denominations. Like seeing my wrongs, making them right, and trying to have good relationships with other people, like that's not like extreme. Like these are very general principles, but I need to have a change in my attitude and my thought. And I need to have the willingness, continuously have the willingness, like am I willing to change this thought? Am I willing to change my attitude? And attitude is defined as a settled way of thinking or feeling about someone or something. Typically one of that is reflected in a person's behavior. So do I have a settled way of thinking or feeling about something? If I do, like am I open to changing that settled way of thinking? And then the thought is an idea or an opinion produced occurring suddenly in the mind. So suddenly have these thoughts, you know. I need to remain open-mindedness, or I need to remain open-minded. All right. So in closing, I just want to return to the theme that we must undergo a change of heart. I'm just going to go to that page again, 143. Okay. We should understand that we must undergo a change of heart. To getting over compulsive eating will require a transformation of thought and attitude. We all had to place recovery above everything, for without recovery, we would have lost both home and business. So this is not optional. This idea of a change of heart is not optional if I want recovery. And the big book has shown me that the pathway for that change. Timer just went off. So I just want to encourage hope. Like if it can happen for me, like it can happen for the newcomer. And little by slowly, like it's not all at once, but if I go each day asking God for like a changed attitude and open mind to think about things in a different way, I'll be better off than I am sticking to my own ideas. So I just want to thank you for listening today. Thank the group just for being here. Without you, I would not be able to be here. And thanks again for asking me to speak. And I will close with that. So back to you, Larry.
Oh, Abby, thank you. Thank you so much for your presentation this morning. You know, your willingness to share your journey and be so authentic really touched our hearts this morning. So it takes courage to be vulnerable, and we appreciate you opening up to us, and very inspiring, very inspiring. So before we transition to our Q&A, well, first, let me give you the share ID number for Abby's presentation this morning. And that share ID number, 22,803. That's 22803. Also, please stay on the line after the recorded portion for Abby D's contact information. We'll ask her for that once we're done with the recording. And at this point, let's move on to the Q&A. If you have a question for Abby, questions only, please. Appreciate that. One question a customer. Here's what you do. I know you know what to do, but just going to tell if someone doesn't know what to do. Press star one to unmute your phone and give me your first name. Who has a question for Abby? And star one to unmute.
Anayeta.
Anayeta.
I have a question.
Okay. Is that P?
Sima P.
Sima. Did I get that right? Okay, Sima P. Great. Who else?
Rachel B.
Okay, I got you. Rachel. Nancy. Who else? Plenty of time. I heard Hanayeta, Sima, Rachel, and Nancy. Anybody else? We can catch you on the back end here. Okay, so we'll go with quest. Okay, Tony. Thank you. Okay, we'll catch you on the back end here if we have more time. But what I heard right now is Hanayeta, Sima, Rachel, Nancy, and Tony. What I would ask is if you would give your last initial when you come up and we'll start off with Hanayeta followed by Sima. Hanayeta, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for your service. And Abby, I love you. I just, whatever you do, when you're leading a meeting, when you're sharing, this was amazing. I just love what you say. And anyway, so you said something, you said emotional dis something, and I didn't get it. But my question is, if you remember what you said, but my question is, you said you have to change your perspective. I was wondering if you could elaborate on changing your perspective.
Yeah, thank you so much. Hi, Hanayeta. I love you too.
Hi, baby.
I think what I was talking about was in my past job, I was emotionally dysregulated like all the time. Like I got on like work conference calls with like really high up people, like the CEO, the CFO, and I would just, you know, be emotionally, like I started crying one time and was like, this isn't fair. Like, it's just too hard. You know, we don't have the support, you know, just not really professional the way I would want to be. And so I was just not regulated. And I think what I meant by like the change of perspective is whenever I'm feeling like things aren't fair or if I'm in resentment, like the change of perspective is seeing like, where are they right and I'm wrong? And it's not really about being right and wrong, but it kind of, I need to see, like, there's just things that I could have changed. Like, I could have, you know, not spoken unkindly about the company or about other people. I could have, you know, tried a little harder in different areas or asked God to help me, like, stay regulated. instead of going to like things aren't fair. I don't know. I didn't do enough to get God to help me with those resentments. I kind of followed the, like there's like two roads, and one is, you know, it cuts off, and it's either I follow my own resentments and I live and I behave in the way that as a result of those resentments, or I can go the other way of like, let's not be in resentment and see where the other people are right and I'm not being helpful. Like, where can I be more helpful and what can I do? And how can I have God help me more than, like, when I'm in, I don't think my higher power would have me be resentful. Like, I can't see my higher power, like, saying things like, well, I deserve this, and, like, things aren't fair. Like, I just, that, to me, isn't in alignment with what I think my higher power would be. I think my higher power would see, like, see the good in people and just, like, kind of pause if agitated and doubtful, basically what the big book says. Like, I didn't do enough to try to get out of my own thinking. I really did hold on to my beliefs about what was wrong with other people, and that didn't really get me anywhere. So I hope that's helpful.
Thanks, Anayeta. Okay, next up is Seema, followed by Rachel. Seema, good morning.
Hey, Larry. Good morning. Thanks for your service. And good morning, Abby and everyone. Thank you for a great share this morning, Abby. So this is Seema P. from Rhode Island, by the way. So you spoke of willingness as being indispensable. My first sponsor told me about 37 years ago when I first came in to pray for the willingness, but don't wait for it to come. I've been recovered probably for the last 7 years. Certainly not cured. So how do you implement this change of heart when you're completely, or if you've even had the situation, when you're completely unwilling to do something? How do you remain open-minded? I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, thank you, Seema. I think it comes back to, like, I ask God to help me be willing, and I just pray until the willingness comes. But for the most part, it comes back to step one for me. Like, I do not want to go back to where I was. So I'm pretty much, if someone were to ask me, am I willing to have a different mindset about this? The answer almost for me is almost always yes. Like, if I say no, that's kind of a problem, because, like, I need to change. I need to be willing to always change. And it might be really, really hard, like a belief that I'm really holding on to, but am I willing to have a different idea about it, or am I at least willing to, like, believe that God can change my ideas? And my higher power is bigger than me clutching on to my own ideas, I just know. So even if I don't have, like, if I don't want to change something or let go of something, like, I do believe that God's power is bigger, and if I continue to pray for the willingness, then I'll eventually get it. And so willingness doesn't always mean, like, I'm happy about everything that I have to do. Like, I was willing to go through with the steps, but, like, everything, I didn't always, like, love every second of, you know, the fourth step and the ninth step. Like, I was still willing to do it, and I still did it, and the results and the feeling, like, came after of the peace and the serenity and all that. But I still did it anyways, because I was trusting that, like, the people who I was taking guidance from, like, they were recovered, and I put my faith in the program, and I put my faith in the group that if I just followed directions of what was in the big book, then, like, I would be okay. And so the willingness for me always comes back to step one. Like, am I willing to set aside my idea about buying this big thing? Well, it's like, I can't really admit that I'm not willing. Like, I'm willing to do whatever for my recovery. So if I don't have the, you know, sometimes it takes, like, me on my knees crying to God, like, God, please help me be willing to change this. Like, every, like, we ask until it comes. So if it's not there yet, like, I'm still asking. So I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, thanks, Seema. Okay, next up on the question is Rachel, followed by Nancy. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning. Thank you, everybody, for your service. Abby, thank you so much. Rachel B. from Illinois, recovering compulsive overeater. Such a great topic. Quick question. So I have a person, my spouse in my life, is struggling with an addiction. And he has said multiple times that he wants to get help, and it affects my safety. It affects me.
Rachel, can we try to formulate a question there?
Yeah.
I know that's a pretty emotional
what do you
thing.
Do
yeah,
with,
I understand.
What do you do when the same thing keeps coming up over and over again? I feel like that is like I have to take a different action. I'm willing. I do what I say I'm going to do, but I can't control another person. But I also know
yeah.
that... You know, what do you have anything, any comments on that? Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rachel. And that's really hard to see someone go through that. I have experience in that area. I'm happy to talk more about it, too, because I think it's a big topic, you know, and I'll just kind of sum it up. For me, there were certain... like behaviors that I could change and certain behaviors I couldn't. And I had to, like, for me in my current situation with a very similar experiences, I just try to show up according to my ideal. So my ideal that I did with my, you know, in the sex inventory part, it basically talks about, you know, we have these ideals for relationships and not only just my sex relations, but how do I, like, seeing the way that I have reacted in my experience, it's been impulsivity, it's been rage, it's been outlash, I've, you know, lashed out. And, like, so looking at all of that, looking at where I've gone wrong, I can see, like, how would God have me behave instead, and it's like show up in love and service. And I do have to continue to work through the resentment and take care of myself in certain ways, you know, like change what I can, but let go of what I can't. And it's a big topic. There's definitely like outside help and also other fellowships. But it's big. So if you want to talk more about that, I definitely can take down my number. And, you know, it's a continuous process of like praying for relief from God and saving me from the resentment, and then like showing up in love and service, however that looks. I can't control what someone else does, but I can always try to like seek guidance from God. I should be behaving. Oh, yeah, that one's a tough one.
Yeah, for sure. And Rachel, thank you for being vulnerable and having the courage to ask the question. It's not easy, but you're helping people by asking it. Okay, next up we have Nancy, followed by Tony. Nancy, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Larry. Thank you for your service, and Hanayetta, and Abby, thank you so much for an honest, heartfelt presentation of a change of heart. My question is that you gave some very practical examples of a change of heart and how our perceptions change, like putting the sponge in the dishwasher was amazing. How do you work with the sponsee where we talk about the thing nobody talks about, food, and what we're doing with food and how to get really honest and have a change of heart with getting help rather than thinking that's not something appropriate to talk about. I hope that makes sense and I hope you can answer the question. Thanks again.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, Nancy. Love you. Thank you for being my friend in recovery and helping me through lots of hard times. And being there for the good times too. But yeah, I think what I hear you asking is like, how do you talk about the food when sometimes, like, the change of heart comes after the food. Like, the food is something that I work with sponsees on early on in the beginning. Like, that's like from square one, is what are the alcoholic foods and behaviors, and, you know, what is it that compulsive eating is for that person, and then, you know, are you willing to put those down? And then, like, I do stay in communication about food. I send my sponsor food. I have sponsees send it to me. I send any changes. I refrain from certain ingredients and behaviors. So, like, that's all very clear from the beginning. If sponsees have questions about food or anything like that, like, I just try to help them with my experience. But, like, the willingness to put the food down in the beginning, like nothing can happen until that happens. So I don't know if I answered your question right, but I definitely stay in communication about food for sure. I need support around food too. And like, if something's weird with my food or something feels off, like, I call my sponsor, text my sponsor, you know, we talk about it. Because this is Overeaters Anonymous. So there is food involved in the solution, but, I don't even know if I answered your question right, but I definitely communicate with sponsees about their food first.
Makes sense to me, for sure. Hey, Nancy, thanks for the question. Okay, Tony, it's your turn. Good morning.
Thank you, Larry. And thank you so much, Abby. This was really a beautiful presentation. I love the actions to do in recurring situations, you know, having a plan. I love that, having a plan. And Nancy said it, like, you know, the putting the sponge in the dishwasher. And it made me think, my husband, when he's on his phone and I want him to entertain me and I just sort of feel bored, I'm going to think about a good action instead. Maybe putting on a song and dancing, that might work. Entertain myself instead. And interestingly, I was going to ask a similar question to Nancy, which was about sponsees relapsing. Because you did say at the beginning of your talk how you were absolutely ready. You know, you hit the ground running. You were, and so was I this last time. But what about the ones that aren't? How do you deal with them? They seem so keen, and then there's a relapse. And not doing what you're asking them to do.
Thank you so much. Hi, Tony. So first, I forgot to mention, I did ask my husband permission to share the story about the sponge, and he laughed like hysterically when I asked him that. He was like, yes, please share that I'm doing a really good job and share the this and that. And I was like, well, this is going to be focused on like me and where I'm wrong, like it's not going to be anything, like, but yeah, anyways, he laughs. He's like, always loves when I have to make amends or change my way of thinking, like he just thinks it's the greatest. So anyways, about the sponsees, you know, I didn't get this right away, so I had 2 years, like I was saying, where I was abstinent, and then I relapsed, and then I had a couple relapses trying to get abstinent again. And then I think after like the last relapse 7 years ago, like that's when I was like, okay, I am willing to do anything you said, like anything. And a new willingness happened with that. I think our experiences bring us to more willingness. For me, that's been the case. So if sponsees relapse, I just kind of work to see like what went wrong. And I can't give willingness, but it, like in my experience, it comes with falling on my face a bunch of times, you know, thinking I have it and then I don't. So I just work with people, you know, it's a process. Maybe not everyone's ready like the very second on our first phone call to do whatever. Like I wasn't either. And so I think it just, I want to create a space where people feel comfortable to share and come back. And so I just work with them, like what happened, and try to see like where there was holes, you know, maybe we need to revisit some things. Usually it's like resentment or, you know, just thoughts that come in that, like, for me, I'm a compulsive eater with a mind that tells me like all these reasons why I'm like not a compulsive eater. So I have like this allergy that tells me, and then a mind that tells me like I don't have the allergy. So it's a lot of like thinking. So we just go through the thinking and go through, you know, maybe I just share what I do. And if people aren't like doing what I do, like I don't really like keep track of like what people do, but I just share what I do. And if people ask and want more, then I give suggestions, but I mean, I'm helping people because it's helping me. So every time I'm sharing my experience and I'm in the big book, like it's helping me, there's nothing wasted. I just try to help them the best I can, like where, what went wrong, is there anything that we can, you know, double down on? And if people aren't willing or they have like, they want to like go a different direction or with a different sponsor or have other ideas, like I encourage them to do what they're like, what they think will be helpful. I'm here if they want my experience, but I'm also not for everyone. So I don't know. I hope that helps. I don't like fire people if they relapse. If that's kind of like the bigger thing. I just kind of work with them. So anyways.
Thanks, Abby.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Tony. Yeah, I don't want this to get around here too much, but Abby's husband, I met him. He's a really great guy. Hope he's okay, we got time for a couple more questions, perhaps, two or three. If you have a question, press star one. Who else? Pete. Gotcha. Who else? Come on, somebody join Pete. All right, going once. I'm flipping the lights off and on, off and on. Final call. Okay, Pete, you're it. good
thanks,
morning,
Larry. Good sure. morning. Thank you for your service, Larry. Thank you, Abby, for your presentation. It was deep and heavy. So you mentioned page 66 where it says any life that includes deep resentment. In your opinion, why do you think they use the word deep versus just resentment? And is there a difference? And if there is a difference, can you tell us what you think it is?
Well, thank you so much, Pete. Now I'm thinking deeply. You know, like, I guess it's like the deep resentments are really like the ones that are in my heart, like, real deep, you know, like it's not, for me, it's not the surface level things. Like if I can pray throughout the day or when it happens and like it goes away, it's not a deep resentment for me. Like sometimes I can just ask, like I can recognize I'm being a little like out of line and I can just ask God to help me not be angry. And then it like, it's like a fleeting thought. It goes away. Like for me, that's kind of like a surface level one, but it's plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. Like the deep resentments for me are the ones that like I'm not giving up on. I think of those are the ones with like deep seated, like my parents or things happened a long time ago, like that I just can't let go of, or thoughts that I continue to hold on to that continuously like cause conflict in my life or in my emotions. Like those are the ones where I really need to have like pray for a changed perspective. Like if someone makes me mad while driving, like I don't need to pray for the next 3 weeks and try to have God like remove that resentment. Like it's fleeting. It's gone. Like I don't hold on to it. But the deep ones, like those are the ones that day in and day out, I continue to stick to my own beliefs about, that I continue to feel wronged by. And like, you know, I've done four steps on, you know, a couple years later that I need to really like be working on. The other ones, I don't know. There's fleeting things throughout the day that bother me that just kind of like go away. So hopefully I answered your question.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Pete. Thanks. Yeah, those minor irritations don't stick to me like Velcro, right? Yeah. So I don't have to deal with those every second. Yeah, it made sense, Abby. All right,
you guys.
Is
there any more time?
You know what? We'll try one more question. You bet. Who's that?
Oh, God bless you. This is Alita J in Minnesota.
From Minnesota.
Thank you for your service, and thank you for the wonderful qualification. I found it very helpful. I'm just wondering if there's any quick advice for chronic relapse or myself. Last time it was, I didn't do a 10th step. I sat on it all day. And another time it was self-care. And just, that's it. Thank you.
Hi, I think it was Alicia. Did I get that right?
Alita J in Minnesota. Thank you.
Hi, yes, thank you. So for me, it would be hard to believe like that if I had like one resentment in one day that I didn't do that I would relapse. Like for me, it would be like something deeper than that. So I would just ask, like, is the food all the way down? Is there any sort of dishonesty going on with the food? The food. And then also like in life, like am I being dishonest anywhere? And then like, is there anything missing in the first steps? You know, am I working with a sponsor? I guess we could talk more about this. If you want to take down my number, I can like speak maybe specifically, you can share more about your journey, but.
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah. I think there's a lot that we would just have to talk through, you know, like how is the foundation steps? Is there any belief that something else can do this? Like that I'm, you know, if there's any belief that I'm not really powerless and my life's unmanageable, like if there's cracks in the foundation, like I think I can do it some other way. I'm always going to have that thought's always going to come back that I can do it some other way. And then, you know, am I really trusting God to help me through the day-to-day things? Am I acting in a way that's in accordance with my ideals? Like, is there anywhere that I'm harming anybody else? So those are just maybe some of the things that come to mind, but definitely happy to chat more about your specific situation and share more about that. Thanks for the question.
Yeah, thanks, Alita. Appreciate you. You know, as I get old here, and boy, am I getting old, sometimes I lose track of the time a little bit. We probably could, if there's one more burning question, I bet we could squeeze it in, if there is. I'll give you that opportunity.
Carol,
let's, you know what? I knew we were going to close with you, Carol. You know what? We're going to close with Carol.
Okay.
Thanks, Carol.
Okay, thank you. I'm Carol, a compulsive overeater, bulimic, and restrictor. I feel recovered for today. I was recovered from bulimia 38 years ago, and then I just had God, but I didn't do the steps, and I just went on with my life, and then I got later on in my life into restricting, and I went back to OA, and I've gone through the steps, and I'm open heart with God, have a really working at everything. Anyway, my question is, how do you know when you've had a spiritual, spiritual awakening? You know, I still say, that's my question. Let's get to, how do you know?
Yeah, hi, Kara.
Hi.
Yeah, hi. Thank you.
Hi. You're welcome.
So I'm trying to look for the spot. It says, you know, that we react differently in life. So if, like, anytime I'm responding in a way that's different than the way I used to react, like, maybe I'm pausing a little bit longer, or maybe I'm actually not mad at someone for doing the same exact thing. You know, maybe I'm having a little bit more peace about it. It's a change in attitude and outlook, and my reactions to life are different. So if I see, and it may not be sudden, like this huge, like sudden upheaval, like it might just be over time. Like I start noticing, you know, I'm not reacting the same way, or I'm not getting this like emotional charge in this certain situation, or maybe I'm able to handle situations that used to baffle me. I think that just being absent over a long period of time, like, doesn't give me that, but, you know, my reactions to life are different. So, I'm trying to see, like, of course, right after
you mean the, like the promises and stuff there, Abby, like 84, 85 after the ninth step and then 10th step.
Yes. Just that, yeah. I'm starting to behave and think differently, you know, and I'm not fighting the food. Like, it just, I'm not avoiding temptation. Like, I'm in a place of neutrality. I feel safe and protected, and, you know, I'm not having a reaction to everything. So that's it.
Yeah. Thanks, Carol. Yeah, Abby, you're so right. That's what I felt, like those promises began to unfold when I completed the steps and continue to do it, right? Yeah, thanks for that. And thanks for the, and thanks to everybody. Just if you had a question or you're just on the line listening, just being here, we're so appreciative. And Abby, thank you so much. What a gem for our archives. Once again, we appreciate you. So please
thank
hang
you.
Out. Yeah. Please hang out. We're going to get Abby's contact information. I want you to literally bombard her with calls. She's got nothing else going on. No, we're helpful,
yes,
right?
Call me.
So. So I'm going to close from page 164 from our meeting's namesake in a chapter called A Vision for You. Let me flip over to the page. I'm at 149. I'll get there. Okay, so our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.